This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Thanks for listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. On today's show, we will hear our recording of events at the Extinction Rebellion in Kansas City and other Earth Day comments. Then, host Richard Mabian will have a talk with Van Jones. After that, Richard and Teresa will have a live interview with Matt Riggs, a.k.a. Eco Elvis, Outreach Coordinator for Mark's Solid Waste Management District, about why contamination and recycling is a problem and how you can be part of the solution. But first, the environmental news for the week of April 22, 2019 on Eco Radio KC. My name is Ebony Johnson. Democracy Now! Reports, hundreds of protesters with Extinction Rebellion rallied at New York City Hall last week and marched across the Brooklyn Bridge to demand a halt to the proposed Williams Pipeline project. 62 activists were arrested after shutting down traffic and staging a die-in. Extinction Rebellion activists took aim at the Republican Party. Washington, D.C. Capitol Police arrested a reported 8 members of the group as they occupied city streets. Demonstrators called on passersby to support their actions and take a stand against fossil fuel-funded politicians. In London, climate activists from Extinction Rebellion blocked major roads and bridges, bringing traffic to a standstill. Police arrested over 200 people in London. At the Vatican, 16-year-old Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg met with Pope Francis as she continues to lead a campaign to press European leaders to act urgently on climate change. New York City's council has approved historic climate change legislation aimed at limiting greenhouse gas emissions from big buildings. Under the bill, most large buildings will need to cut carbon dioxide emissions by 40% by 2030 and by 80% by mid-century. Bloomberg News reports that former Texas Republican Governor Rick Perry is planning to leave his post as Secretary of the Department of Energy. In 2012, Perry infamously forgot the name of the Department of Energy as he proposed abolishing 3 federal agencies. He was later tapped by President Trump to lead one of the agencies he wanted to do away with, Department of Energy. Democratic presidential candidate Senator Elizabeth Warren announced she would ban any new fossil fuel drilling on public lands or waters on day one of her presidency. In a post on Medium, Warren also vowed to increase the production of renewable energy, restore protections to national monuments targeted by the Trump administration, bring in local and tribal leaders to help manage public lands, and create thousands of jobs via a youth and veteran conservation corps. Senator Warren also wrote, "We must not allow corporations to pillage our public lands. America's public lands belong to all of us. We should start acting like it." Springfield News Leader reports, a southern Missouri state park on the 11 Point River could soon be headed for auction. Republicans, still fuming at how former Democratic Governor Jay Nixon went about buying the 4,200 acres in Oregon County, Missouri, gave initial approval last week to a measure that would force its sale.
On Thursday, April 18th, about 20 activists gathered at the corner of 31st Street and Southwest Traffic Way as part of an Extinction Rebellion action. I had the opportunity to speak to a couple of people who were there to find out why they were there. Here's what they had to say.
Sure, my name's Elise, and I am here today because I'm excited by Extinction Rebellion as a movement. They're kind of new, and I think their approach to mass extinction is important. I think that it is urgent, and I think that people need to be aware that we have to act now. I have kids, and I certainly am against murder, and I think that climate change is a way that we're going to murder all the humans on the planet.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm Joe Crane, and I'm here because of my grandkids. I want a world for them. I want a world where they have food. we're looking at a world where there's going to be fewer fish, there's going to be fewer plants, there's going to be fewer animals, and we're not going to have anything but each other to eat. That's going to be kind of bad.
That was Joe Crane, the Green Party's 2018 candidate for the U.S. Senate seat in Missouri. This Extinction Rebellion action was part of a worldwide network of actions. Extinction Rebellion started in the United Kingdom. For Eco Radio KC and KKFI, I'm Mike Murphy.
Okay, hi.
Hi.
What's your name?
Mark Johnson.
Mark, what are you doing here today?
I'm here to take a look around and try to get some more ideas of how to make our household more eco-friendly. And we have a lot of things that we've implemented, and there are always new ways, new ideas to innovate and do things. Sometimes they're common sense and sometimes not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you guys married?
We are.
All right.
I'm Melissa Johnson.
Okay. And I imagine you're here for the same reasons?
Yes, yeah. And I'm just real proud of a lot of the things he did to our old home in Pittsburgh, Kansas. And now that we live in Lawrence, I'm excited to, I don't know, just see what happens to this home.
Well, generally, what do you think of the state of the planet, the state of the world? Are we getting more conscious about the problems?
I think in some ways we might be, but there are a lot of things that we're really behind on addressing, and I think it's just up to the individual right now to do as much as they can so we don't have to rely on the larger entities to do these things. And I think as long as we show an interest in it, we'll start to make these things more important for industries and other politicians to start following as well.
Yeah. All right. Well, have a good day.
Thanks
a lot.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, this is Richard Mabian, and you know, it's kind of nice. We're sitting here listening to these folks talking, and you know, this is Earth Day. This is Earth Day, and I started out thinking the last time I was on here talking about Earth Day is that this is the beginning of us headed into our 50th year, people. And I'm hoping that we will spend this whole year continuously doing things to make emphasis about what Earth Day is really about. This should not just be a one-day event when we deal with the 50th year. By the time the 50th year rolls around, the anniversary itself, we should all see bright lights just going off in our own heads. So get ready for it. Good evening. Got a good show coming to you. Before we get started into it, I got a special announcement for you. I have a guy here on the phone who they said Van Jones, and I'm sorry, unless he can change his voice to sound like Van Jones. His name is Michael. Michael, you want to introduce yourself, and then I'll let the folks know why you're here.
For having me on the show, my name is Michael Estrada. I'm the organizing director with Green for All. Shout outs to our founder, Van Jones, unfortunately not able to be here with us today. But yeah, I'm here with Green for All to talk a little bit about a recent campaign that we just launched in light of, you know, this being Earth Day and April being Earth Month. And our campaign is called the Fuel Change Campaign. And what we're doing is we're looking at the transportation sector, which is, you know, one of the biggest greenhouse gas emitters of all sectors in the U.S. And what we're looking to do is help change what the solutions are in that space. So we're looking at electrifying buses and bus fleets across the country. We're looking at bringing equitable policy that helps make sure that there's a just transition to clean and renewable energy in the transition sector, and making sure that those jobs and those resources end up in the communities that are affected most.
Okay, well, let me bring people up to date on how we got here. I am also one of those Van Jones persons. I'm a fellow. I went through his fellow class back in 2008. I was the second class to go through. And I got a call from Michael's folks wanting to know if we would help them out and host this watch party. So I was able to contact with Metro Energy, and we were able to also contract with some spoken words folks from here in town. And on April 30th, that's when we're going to be hosting this fuel event that Michael was just talking about. Michael, kind of give an idea of how that event is going to be carried out.
Yeah. So at the beginning of the month on April 3rd, we released a music video for our song called The Fuel Change Anthem. And what we did was we ran a national contest for artists all over the country to submit their song and their story about how they're affected by transit pollution. And so one of the young men on the song, his name is Nehemiah. He's an 18-year-old kid out of Oakland, talked about how, you know, in high school he had to actually quit playing sports because his asthma got so bad. And we had some folks coming from Boston area. We had people from the Los Angeles area, and basically just telling different stories of how they've been affected by transit pollution. And the video has done very, very well. We're almost, you know, close to 500,000 views across our different platforms for the video. So it's been spreading, you know, fantastically and sort of spreading the word around this issue. And what the watch parties are is the watch parties are going to be a chance for communities to come together, like you all hosting it in your town, be able to watch the music video and then have a discussion around the different ways that they see their communities affected by transit. So it may look like, you know, a bunch of old dirty diesel buses that the school children are riding to and from class on. It may look like, you know, bus routes that don't go far enough and leave certain people without access to those buses. It may look like, you know, some of these policies and things that are in place that keep these dirty diesel buses on the road much longer than they should be, even though the science shows us that, you know, it's making people sicker. You know, it's causing climate change. It's contributing factors to these various issues. So really, these are chances for communities to come together and talk about how they see that affecting them, and then work with Green for All as we move forward through the rest of the year to really start bringing some tangible change to some of these places.
Okay. That I want everyone to know that this was just an impromptu way for us to get you on to make this announcement. We're going to have you back on again next Monday for a follow-up to this. And and for people here locally, that's going to be April the 30th. It's going to be at Metro Energy, and they're over off of 31st in Maine. You'll start hearing more about it. We'll put something on the website to make people aware of what it is we're doing. Michael, I thank you for calling in, and I'll get back with you next Monday, buddy.
Thank you very much, Richard. Appreciate it. Talk to y'all soon.
Yes,
bye-bye.
Sir. Thank you.
Tell your smart speaker, play KKFI, and enjoy the programming you love. Yeah, you KKFI, good. Wherever you are.
Okay.
See, looking for a new place to play? Make KKFI your new playground. We govern ourselves. We create conversation. We curate music. We run a radio station. Visit us online at kkfi.org and click the volunteer tab.
You want to do it? You can do it. Come along.
Reducing runoff one field at a time on this current cast. To keep agricultural runoff from polluting waterways, farmers can plant cover crops and use no-till farming. It used to be difficult and expensive to figure out which fields need these approaches the most. But John Winston of the nonprofit Winrock International says now computer models can show how much polluting runoff comes from each field, so farmers know where to target their efforts.
The farmer then becomes armed with the information of where do I get the greatest bang for the buck, and they choose those fields first.
Winston hopes this approach will be used to reward farmers financially for reducing the amount of nutrient pollution their farms generate. CurrentCast is produced in partnership with Cornell University's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more at currentcast.org.
Thank you for listening to Eco Radio KC. In honor of Earth Day, the 50th anniversary, we are so lucky today to have Matt Riggs. He's Outreach Coordinator at Mark's Solid Waste Management District. Matt, thanks for coming in. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
So you contacted Eco Radio KC, and you want to talk to our listeners about problems of recycling, why it's good, problems with doing it. And so I'm going to let you just launch right into it.
Okay. Well, a lot of people have been hearing horror stories on the media lately about China doesn't want our recyclables anymore. They're being landfilled, they're being burned, they're being warehoused and all that. And some of that is happening definitely more on the coasts. But the good news is that right here in the metro area, our biggest haulers and processors of waste, which are Waste Management and WCA, are currently able to find a home for all the materials that are accepted in the commingled stream. So that's actually good news, but that all hinges on people recycling correctly. And that takes two forms. One is don't put anything in your bin that shouldn't go in there. And the other is when you do put the stuff that goes in your bin, make sure and prepare it properly.
Isn't that the truth? We're so lucky now. We have a curbside stream of recycling. And the problem is people are throwing trash in there. Mm-hmm. Isn't this correct? And they're not properly recycling. They're not recycling enough, because we still have recyclable material everywhere in the waste stream. Mm-hmm. And then when things are thrown into these recycling bins, they're not always the right thing. So let's start with the yes items, Matt.
Okay.
What can people recycle in their their curbside stream?
Well, it's comes down to four basic streams, and those include metals, which are basically aluminum cans, tin cans, otherwise known as steel cans, aerosol cans, as long as they're empty, and aluminum foil products. So that's the metal stream. Then there's the paper stream, which is basically any kind of mixed paper, junk mail, office paper, old homework, paper sacks, all that kind of stuff, phone books. Then there's cardboard, which is like cardboard boxes, like, you know, your Amazon Prime box that you just got in the mail. It's also stuff like cereal boxes and other types of grocery products come in the flat cardboard. And then plastics, you know, any type of plastic container, including bottles, tubs, cups, clamshells, as long as they have the number 1 through 7 on the bottom and they're clean, they can be put in your curbside bin. So those four streams comprise the commingled stream, which is what most people think of when they think of recycling.
Okay, I'm going to jump in here with you, Matt. First of all, if anyone out there would like to call in, please do so. Your number is 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. I'm one of those persons. I'm glad I have a love of my life in my house who takes care of our recycling, because I'm one of those folks who would be a contaminator. And the reason I'm saying that is not because of putting the wrong stuff in, but not washing out the stuff before you put it in. Now, my missus, she washes the stuff out. I mean, you know, I put stuff in the green bucket, she takes it out and cleans it up and put it back in there. Is that what we should be doing? Is that a move that we should start considering?
Yes, and that's one of the key things to properly preparing the items that should go in the bin is if you have, like any container you have, like glass, metal, or plastic, obviously glass can't go in your curbside bin, and we can talk about that later, but any kind of container that you have should be rinsed first, and it doesn't have to be like scrubbing it out with a brush or running it through your dishwasher. It's just to give it a quick rinse, because two of the big no-nos in curbside are food waste and liquid waste of any kind. Right. Once you get a lot of liquid or food in there, it really ruins almost the whole recycling load pretty badly. So you definitely want to rinse containers when you're done with them.
I think that's important. I saw a news bit on the contamination that's going in, and they showed that after the stuff came in on the truck, they put it like on a conveyor belt, and they have to pay people to sit there to be snatching stuff out of it to get that stuff out so that they can have some clean products going in for the sale or whatever it is they do with it. And I think that's good news for people out here in the community to understand that that's just, you know, defeating the purpose. Most people who recycle have a reason for doing that. Mm-hmm. And I think they should know that there's a process that needs to be instilled in doing that too.
Right.
That's very good.
Mm-hmm. So perhaps you want to hit on these yes items that can be recycled better. So you talk about cardboard boxes, and then curiously, shipping materials like air pillows, bubble wrap, shipping envelopes, which are bubble wrap. I'm surprised to hear that plastic material can go into my curbside stream.
Yeah. But well, it's basically all a number two and number four resin. So it's very similar to your grocery bags. You know, all the grocery plastic grocery sacks can be taken back to grocery stores, a place like Walmart, Target. But any of the the shipping materials can also be, because they're basically a very similar type of plastic. So that's the air pillows, the bubble wrap. If you get things not in a box, but they just come in a stretchy plastic envelope, those too can be recycled.
Okay, but they can't go into your curbside. So where
right.
What do we where should we put those?
Those can all go with your grocery bags when you take them to your grocery store or Target or Walmart. There's a lot of kinds of film that can be recycled, and those include all those shipping envelopes, but also things like bread bags, dry cleaning bags. So and we all have all that listed on our plastics page on recyclespot.org.
It's good. I'm glad you mentioned that about your mm-hmm. page. We were mm-hmm. talking about this out there in the green room. Let's talk about education. Because you know we have a portion of the population, especially in the low-income communities, that sometimes the recycling is just totally non-existent. And I think it has more to do with them being taught or showed or empowered about why we're doing it over them just refusing to do it. So I heard you say something about that's something that you all are looking at.
Right.
Getting an education program going.
Right. So, you know, just as important as having a bin in your house or a program where you work and having the signage and all that stuff is just educating people what goes in the bin. And that's like the biggest chunk missing right now, probably across the country, but especially here in the metro area, is okay. the education. It's like, yeah, we have bins. We have some signs. We know we have a program at our workplace, or we know we have one in our neighborhood. But I have no idea what goes in there because yeah. nobody's telling me anything. And so that's what we try to do is through our Recycle Better flyer, through our Recycle Spot magnets, we try to get one of those in everybody's hands that we can talk to so they can know what to do at the household level. And then we have the Recycle More at Work program, which works with businesses and organizations to do the same thing. We help them get the right bins, the right signage, use all their communication tools and inside their businesses and organizations to maximize education. Because once you get that education up, most people are willing to do the right thing, but they right. have to know what that is.
Yeah, I agree. I don't yeah. think that it's a problem with people doing it. I don't think it's a problem with people doing it as much as it is them getting the right kind of education. And I see that as being a problem. I'm in Wyandotte County for a fact. Mm-hmm. And I know people are somewhat not for sure, just like mm-hmm. you just said,
right.
what should go,
right.
what shouldn't go.
Yeah.
I find myself sometimes I have to ask. I'm telling you, I got mm-hmm. the right person at home because I can ask them.
Right.
But even when it comes down to your laundry soap, containers, mm-hmm. you know,
yep.
you got that. I got, hey, did this go in there or not? So, mm-hmm. so that is an issue,
right?
Very much so.
Mm-hmm.
On the subject of cardboard boxes that household products come in, any cardboard can be recycled, and it's helpful if the person breaks it down, flattens that box
right.
before they
boxes,
put it.
Yeah, boxes take up a lot of room,
a lot of space.
I guess one area that people get very confused about are paper food containers.
Yeah.
So a lot of people throw stuff in like frozen food containers, fast food containers, takeout boxes, and even stuff like paper plates or their Starbucks cup
right.
because it's paper and it recycles paper, so it must be recyclable. But the problem with all those materials I just mentioned is they all have a very thin coating of plastic on them to keep the food or the liquid inside and not from seeping through the container. And that plastic makes it not recyclable, and you can't even compost it. So that stuff has to go right in the trash. So
yeah those are important. I mean, you're hitting on it. You're hitting mm-hmm. on details there.
Okay, so I don't
really
understand
important.
Why catalogs and magazines can get, that's covered with plastic too, that slick paper. Why does that recycle?
Actually, no, that's more, a lot of times that's coated with other polished, it's highly polished paper and stuff like that. So it's not the same coating. So that's why shiny catalogs and magazines can go in there, but the food can't, containers
Styrofoam.
Can't.
Styrofoam. Mm-hmm. Does it go in there?
No, styrofoam.
See, and that's
styrofoam can't go in curbside, and really any type of styrofoam that has had any food grade.
And those are majors. I'm within
yeah.
your,
right.
your neighborhood, within
right.
your family concept,
uh-huh.
styrofoam is what is probably the most major thing they have. You know,
yeah.
coming from stores, you bringing mm-hmm. food home and all
right.
that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's an issue because people don't right. know for sure
right.
can it go in there or
yeah.
not.
Yeah, and so that's stuff like takeout boxes or meat trays and stuff like that. It doesn't have any value even if it were clean, but people put those things in there filthy, you know, with grease and all kinds of stuff stuck on them. So it really can contaminate the recycling stream.
I think that's important. I don't think I've ever heard really a whole kind of conversation going out about the contamination. That's when you had that in your letter when you said it to us. I was excited to be here with Terry because I think that's an important area that needs to start being addressed. If we're going to do this, we might as well start doing it right. And our future generation needs to grow up because that's what this is about. That's really about them being educated in the homes of what it is you should and should not do. And I think that's a good thing to start talking about the contamination aspect.
Well, Matt, let's start. You told us top five materials to recycle better. Number one, shipping materials. Cardboard boxes. So how to do it better is to flatten that box.
Right. Flatten it and take it either to a drop-off recycling center or put it in your curbside bin.
And then what about leaving the tape on?
Tape's fine. There's a certain amount of contamination that's allowed when it comes to stuff like tape or staples and different things like that. So that shouldn't be a concern.
But any type of plastic film, the consumer needs to take that to a place that they can drop off plastic bags and plastic film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's good to know. Now then, electronics, e-waste, mm-hmm. anything that runs on a cord or battery. So as opposed to throwing that in the trash, mm-hmm. what would you suggest a person do with it?
Well, first off, a lot of people think of e-waste as just like, it's my cell phone or it's my TV. But when you talk about anything with a cord or battery, that also includes stuff like small appliances, mm-hmm. like your coffee maker, your hair dryer, your vacuum cleaner. It includes like kids' toys, like remote control cars. It controls all the small stuff that builds up in your drawer over time, like a flashlight or a TV remote or an old hearing aid. All that stuff runs on a quarter battery, and all that stuff is recyclable right here in the metro area. A lot of that stuff is accepted at some of the major retailers like Best Buy, Staples, Office Depot, Office Max. There's also another great firm in town called Midwest Recycling Center that literally takes anything that runs on a quarter battery. So there's options for all those. They definitely shouldn't go in your trash.
And that's good. I mean, I'm sitting there because I got a basement full of that stuff, and I'm sitting there going, you know what we do? We set it out in front of the house, and those people that come by before the trash trucks to make their hustles for the whatever salvage, they grab them. Mm-hmm. And I'm always said, in fact, when I saw mine in the basement, I said, I'll just put them out there. I'm sure somebody will grab them. Mm-hmm. So I guess is there a money-making aspect to those?
Really, electronics are such a combination of plastic. They're mostly plastic, but a lot of metal.
Yeah.
They even have tiny amounts of precious metals, even some hazardous substance in them. So they're a very big combination of stuff. So if the scrapper has a line on somebody that can actually make, because they're only going to take stuff they can make money off
right.
of.
Right, I
know,
that's
just
what I'm
recycle
saying.
It for the good of recycling.
I figure
so,
they got a line of somebody that repairs and rebuilds computers is what the little garage places. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking they must know somebody that does that, and they get them and they get nickels and dimes and dollars from them.
But, you know, probably the best way to deal with it is if you have an old computer or an old hairdryer or something, just to recycle that directly.
Right.
Because you never really know with the scrappers where it's going to end up.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
Yeah.
That's your see. That's what y'all call them, the scrappers.
Yeah. Yep.
Very good. Uh-huh. Yeah, I like that.
Well, Matt, I see your website, recyclespot.org, no spaces, gives events for electronic recycling in the greater Kansas City area. This is true. And so when's your next electronics recycling event?
Well, you'd have to check the calendar. I didn't check that before I came in. We have a huge list of them on there. But a lot of local cities have electronics collection events along with, like, you know, paper shredding events and that kind of stuff. And that's a convenient way, especially if there's none of the retailers nearby. For people to get rid of their e-waste responsibly.
Well, there's one in Parkville. I'm taking this from your website on June the 1st, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And in my town, the electronics recycling events are just a pleasure because you drive up, they have it cordoned off so that people can't just drive all over the parking lot. And then they're so nice about taking this junk is what, you know, used electronic equipment, and I trust they're making good use out of it.
Yes.
Keeping what they can, what can be kept, and disposing of what can't be kept. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I got a good question for you. This has been my annual since January. Conversation question for anyone that I'm have as I got my I am interviewing. We're talking 2008 to 2018, 10 years of environmental stuff. Mm-hmm. And so my question has been to those people like yourself who's been involved for that length of time, what's your good, bad, and ugly? What do you see has happened in the city, in Kansas City, in the nation, as far as the positive aspect of this time? Where do you see us going?
Well, the positive, I mean, in our field, everything is a positive and a negative at the same time.
I threw that
so,
in there.
Yeah, so like the positive thing, like with the whole plastic pollution, that has just exploded exponentially in terms of people's awareness of the plastic that's in our water, it's in our food, it's in now it's in the air. It's everywhere and at every size, and it never goes away. So that people becoming aware of that and seeing the impact that is having throughout every ecosystem in our world, that's a good thing, because it's that awareness, people understanding the problem and wanting to do something about it. So I think that that awareness that's come with that has been a really good thing for opening people's eyes. So,
okay, do you think that it's in that awareness that has made this movement even more? Because remember now, when we in 2008, they was calling recycling the low hanging fruit. That was just, you know, that's just it really doesn't have a lot to do with the sustainability of this earth, but it has become a major. Do you think it has become a major? I mean, it's...
Well, it's... people are more aware of it now than they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, et cetera. But I think you have to put recycling in perspective with the other R's, the three R's, reduce, reuse, recycle. Those first two often get skimmed over, and yet they're more important than recycling.
Right.
Because when you reduce waste, you're not creating waste in the first place. And what people forget is that even when you recycle something, you still have a lot of resources and a lot of energy and a lot of pollution that's created to make that old thing into a new thing. Now, that's a lot less than using virgin resources, but still, it's very resource intensive. But when you're doing waste reduction, you're not creating the waste in the first place. And that's really where that's the more important action over the long term that people need to take, is not creating that waste in the first place.
That has been my answer to the problem with China and the whole issue, because if we had been educating people about the waste that's being made in packaging, that by now that would not be an issue, because people would not be getting those packages. I'm even telling folks, if we would stop getting our food in those containers, in those plastic bags, I guarantee you retailers would stop buying them. If people would start walking in there with their own bags and stuff or whatever's needed, and that's eventually the way we're going to have to go, then that's going to do a lot with getting those out of our day-to-day activities.
I mean,
that's the one way of doing it.
I
brought along a single piece of paper that gives nine reasons to refuse single-use plastic. Refusing is part of the reduce consumption. It's just say, I don't want your plastic bag. And good reasons for that: plastic is made from fossil fuels. Plastic will still be here in hundreds of years. Only a tiny percentage of plastic is recycled. Plastic bottles can leach toxins into food and drink, so people that are using these plastic bottles to drink from, it's a problem to their health. It causes hormone disruption and cancers. It pollutes our oceans. It kills animals and birds. And it enters our food chain. So it's an easy thing, as we go around and do our shopping, to just carry your own bag.
Yeah,
nothing
I think that's
could
the,
really be easier
that's the key,
than
that's
that.
That's the key right there. But that's where we are. That's where I'm at with this conversation about in our 10-year span, what have we accomplished. And that's one of the things that's going into the future, is how we get to a point of creating a
some type of implement, some kind of instrument that people can use that's convenient, and you know, folks are real conscious about looks. It's going to have to be something that's going to go with what they're wearing, you know, and so just like the tennis shoes.
Right.
So it's going to have to be something that...
Carry your own bag with your monogram on it.
Yeah.
So, Matt, we're going to have to take a break here in 5 minutes, but I want to talk about things that do not go in the curbside recycling bin, because we want to educate everyone. So, okay, we've talked at length about plastic bags and film. And what are some of the other things that people should not put in their curbside recycling?
Well, glass is a definite no-no. So that can go, the you know, Ripple Glass has the large purple dumpsters all over town. So everyone should have one nearby. You can drop off all your glass in those. Another item that's problematic are what the industry calls tanglers. So if you're walking through a neighborhood on recycling day, you'll see a lot of things like garden hoses or electrical cords or old shower curtains, long stringy things. And once these get in the material recovery facility, which is where all this is processed, they get stuck in the machinery. And actually, plastic bags are a tangler, too. So once you combine all that stuff in there, they literally have to shut down the entire facility to get all that out, which is a...
Well, here's a million-dollar question about these machines. The pop bottles, the plastic bottles that people drink water or soda from, do you screw the lid on and recycle, or do you take the lid off?
You should always put the lid back on.
Okay.
It's a different kind of plastic, but it's what the industry calls smalls, which include things like straws, caps, plastic silverware, all those things. But caps are 100% recyclable. They just have to be – they have to make it through the recycling gauntlet. And if they're loose, they're small, they often fall through the equipment and just end up getting thrown in the trash. So, yes, you should always put them back on.
And then styrofoam, that's a terrible problem. Styrofoam is simply trash. I remember, I'm old enough to remember, I guess, when McDonald's served their sandwiches in styrofoam clamshells. And it really did not take the company very long before they began to serve it in a cardboard box. So those people listening to Eco Radio that manufacture sandwiches, you can get recyclable boxes or wraps to put these things in, correct?
Well, the thing is that a lot of those fast foods have that thin plastic coating even on it, something that looks just like it's just paper. There's nothing else there. They all have that thin plastic. So if you're really going to a more environmentally friendly version, it would have to be actually compostable, which is different than just biodegradable. So if it's actually compostable, that's great. But then... there's always a complicating factor. Then you have to make sure that the product is actually being composted and not thrown in a landfill, because once it gets in a landfill, it could be plastic, paper, metal. Nothing's happening to it once it's in a landfill. So
now, are they teaching this in schools, elementary, middle, high school?
Yeah, there's a lot of teachers out there that take on recycling, and I do a lot of schools presentations and that kind of thing. But, I mean – you could always use more education.
You could do more. So it's not, it hasn't become like a curriculum yet, has it?
I mean, recycling education, you can definitely, if you know how to incorporate it so that it meets your state standards and stuff. There's a lot of great curricular supplements and lessons and plans out there that teachers can use that meet state standards. It's just really making that an emphasis at your school. It's like, we're going to meet our standards, but we're going to do it via recycling education.
Yeah, I'm wondering about that because that's that. Yesterday I was at an Easter a dinner, and the daughter of one of the ladies that was there, so like she's about maybe 14 years old, and she stopped eating meat. And so I asked the mother what happened. She said because of cruelty to animals. And I said, where did she get that? And it was out of school. Now, that's a different reason than why folks that don't, like, I don't eat meat, so that's why I was interested in talking to her. But it was a different reason for her not eating meat. In fact, I asked her, do you think this is going to stick with you, you know, about the cruelty of animals, or is this just a passing fancy, you know, next day you know you're slamming down a hamburger somewhere. We're gonna take this break. You got another minute before we do it? Go ahead.
Well, I have a question before we go to break. Matt, why doesn't shredded paper recycle? Because it's paper.
Right. So the material recovery facilities are set up to take, they're very container centric. So shredded paper is very small. It kind of falls into that smalls category. It falls through the machinery. So it's not something you can put curbside. It's not something you should take to your drop-off recycling center. If you want to recycle paper and you need to shred it, it's always best to take it to a city paper shredding event or to an office supply store such as Staples or something. They have on-site shredding, and they're set up to actually recycle the shredding.
My office used to have a commercial recycling, and I would always ask if for sure the paper was being recycled, and they assured me it was. Mm-hmm. So then I was confused when you said it didn't recycle, right. But it can be recycled, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
It just needs to go into the correct stream.
Right.
And, you know, it really pays to be so careful. It's mm-hmm. good. We're going to take a break.
Right. I'm going to give the number out before we go, 816-931-5534, if you want to call back in. Thank you.
The United States is the only developed country that relies on employer-sponsored health insurance to pay for a majority of health care. This system is showing its limitations with high costs and a population that is less healthy year after year. Is now the time to pass Medicare for All? This week on All Souls Forum, members from the Physicians for a National Health Plan will give a compelling case why Medicare for All may help us become a healthier country. Join us Wednesday evenings at 6 p.m. here at 90.1 FM, KKFI.
Race issues are peace issues. Speakers from One Struggle KC, Advocates for Immigrant Rights and Reconciliation, Al Haddad and Surge KC, discuss this issue on Saturday, April 27th from 3 to 6 at All Souls UU Church. More info at peaceworkskc.org. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In 60 years, Philadelphia will be hotter and winters will be wetter. It could feel a lot like Memphis, Tennessee does now.
Cities like Philadelphia, Boston, New York, pick your large city in the eastern U.S., they're all becoming more like what we'd associate with southeastern cities today. So they're becoming warmer in all seasons.
Matt Fitzpatrick of the University of Maryland Center for Environmental Science created an interactive online map to help people understand how global warming will affect the place where they live. You can click on cities across the country to see how temperature and precipitation are likely to change and find out which other cities' current climate is the closest match.
I think it is an intuitive way to communicate climate change.
The map shows two scenarios, one in which carbon emissions continue to rise and another in which they start to decline by 2040. The lower pollution scenario results in impacts that are much less extreme, demonstrating the importance of climate action.
Hopefully that changes some minds and informs people and they start to act accordingly.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Thank you, listeners, for listening to Eco Radio today. We've been having a great show talking with Matt Riggs from MARC about recycling, trying to understand what can be recycled and how, and the importance of recycling things. So now then, Matt, there are a few things we didn't even cover, hazardous waste materials such as paint, for example, and you say we can recycle aerosol cans, but some of those are aerosol paint cans, and then I'm confused by that.
Okay.
How does a person recycle chemicals?
Well, first of all, let me define paint. You know, a lot of people just think it's paint, I got to get rid of it. But paint is part of a large category of materials called household hazardous waste. And that's anything around your house that has like danger, warning, or caution on the label. And so that's a lot more than just paint. I always call it the stuff that lurks in your garage.
Yard chemicals.
Under your sink. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't even realize in their medicine cabinet. Mm-hmm. A lot of what's in there is highly toxic too, or can be. Broad categories include paint and any paint-related products, lawn and garden chemicals, pesticides, household cleaners of all kinds, batteries, fluorescent light bulbs, which have mercury in them, and even stuff like beauty products like hair coloring, fingernail polish, all those things can have a lot of toxic substances in them. So all those things together called Household Hazardous Waste. And the good thing about this waste stream is that there's an option for almost everybody in the metro area. If you live on the Kansas side of the state line, every county has a facility where any city within that county can take it for free, and it gets properly disposed. And then on the Missouri side, it's more of a membership program. But most of the cities on this side of the state line are members, which means that the people that live in those cities can take it for free to the Kansas City, Missouri Household Hazardous Waste Facility. And April through October, we also have a collection event. So people who live in the outlying areas like Smithville and Harrisonville and Green Valley also have a fairly convenient opportunity to take it to a drop-off event. So
there is no doubt that I'm an optimist, and I think that as we become informed about what recycles and what doesn't, we're going to learn not to even buy those products, acquire the products as it is. And so I look forward to the time we can have you back on, Matt. And I know our listeners are all aware that you have a dual identity as Eco Elvis. Now, when we go out, we will play one of your great songs, Reduce, Reuse, Recycle. Those are the three R's of the modern world. And I want to add one, and that is refuse. So when you go to the store, just say, I don't want that plastic bag. You don't even have to take a paper bag many times. Everyone has a hand, or perhaps you have a bag on you and you can use your bag. You don't have to acquire all that chemical. You don't have to. You can look at the very small print of all these magazines that you're getting in the mail, all the promotional materials, and say, quit sending me this stuff.
Right.
This can be done, correct?
Right. Yeah. And the thing that a lot of times you get somebody says, well, what do you do to help the environment? And I always say, well, it's what I don't do. What I don't do is I don't buy these products. What I don't do is I don't spray pesticides in my yard. What I don't, so it's more like, oh, I don't do all these things, which has an impact.
That's right.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, it's been very nice. And Georgia.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. It's been very nice.
But we're going to hear from Eco Elvis.
I use less energy, buy less stuff, use less water, yes it's tough. I walk on bike instead of taking the car. I reduce, I reuse, I recycle. With all my heart, I eat only what I need. On the food chain where I feed, maybe I reuse and fix things till they just fall apart. I reduce, I reuse, I recycle.
Baby, hear me talking.
Well, I thought there'd always be more that came from
in terms of natural resources
until I began to see that the earth has a limit
that we're
starting to exceed, and none of us should take more than we need. So won't you please recycle your cans? Plastic, glass, paper too, buy recycled and help to close the loop. I reduce, I reuse, I recycle more and more.
Well, they always say there's more where that came from, so go ahead, throw it away, we'll make more. Until, darling, until I began to see that the earth has a limit that we're starting to exceed, and none of us, not one, should take more than we need.
So won't you please recycle your cans, plastic, glass, paper too, buy recycled and help to close the loop.
Close that loop, baby, close it.
I reduce, I reuse, I recycle.
thank you very much.
Now for the calendar of events for the week of April 22, 2019. On April 24th, the Green New Deal Town Hall, hosted by Sunrise Movement KC, from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at Unity Temple on the Plaza. And at Living Well on the Earth at Rolling Hills Library, located at 1904 North Belt Highway Street in Joseph, Missouri, we'll sample local organic foods as people learn about ways we can live well in a sustainable environment. That starts at 5:45 p.m. On April 25th, there will be a Paris to Pittsburgh screening from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at UMKC's Miller-Nichols Learning Center. This documentary tells the stories of American people, businesses, and municipalities that are working to create renewable energy jobs and reduce carbon emissions. On April 25th at 6:30 p.m., the Lawrence Public Library will host EcoTalks, a lecture series focusing on environmental education and action. Nancy O'Connor, who works with the MERSH Growing Foods, Growing Health program, will present on sustainability and food security. This program is presented in partnership with Center for Community Outreach and Lawrence Public Library. On April 27th, the 2019 Plantaholic Frolic bus tour will begin at 7 a.m. For more information, contact gardenersconnect.org. And also on April 27th, the Kansas River Cleanup for Lawrence will be held from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Meeting will take place in the public parking lot at 2nd and Locust in North Lawrence. The Nature Conservancy will provide trash and recycling bags, water, and snacks. Bring your own water bottle. Please bring work gloves if you have them and wear sturdy shoes and long sleeves and pants. And lastly, on April 27th, Funeral for Our Planet from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. at J.C. Nichols Memorial Fountain in Kansas City. Extinction Rebellion Kansas City, Green Party of Kansas City, Missouri, and other activists meet to honor all of the organisms who have been wiped out and will be wiped out if we don't stop catastrophic climate change. These items and more can be found at the KKFI.org Eco Radio KC program page or on our Eco KC Facebook page.
We're killing our plants and animals. Animals consider eating anything. All that trash can't be digested, causing death. This also goes for our plants. Piles of trash are ruining and killing them. In some animals that it composed, you would see all the trash that it consumed. The most we can do is educate people by having public speakers go to schools to educate on the topic and having litter laws where it's needed. With no litter, we would have a beautiful environment and live in healthy conditions. This is brought to you by J.C. Harmon High School and 90.1 FM KKFI.
Good news this Earth Day. Sustainability is within reach. The details on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
April 22nd is Earth Day, and there's much to celebrate.
Scientists in Europe released a new study concluding that with technologies currently available, it's highly realistic for the entire world to transition to 100% clean, renewable energy by 2050.
The four-year study from a Finnish university, LUT, and a German organization, Energy Watch Group, looked at how to meet the 1.5 degrees Celsius target of the Paris Climate Treaty. They found that while the transportation sector will take longer to convert, the power and heat sectors of the world economy can be drastically decarbonized by 2030.
The 300-page report says the solution is to get more than two-thirds of the world's electricity from solar and the remainder from other renewable sources, including wind and hydropower.
The leader of the team of 18 researchers said that the issue is not technological, but whether there's the political will to get it done.
There is evidence that the political will is shifting toward renewable energy. Yale Climate Connections reports that more than 100 cities across the U.S. have committed to transition to 100% renewables, with most aiming to meet that goal by 2035.
And on Thursday, the New York City Council passed a group of bills that is aimed at reducing carbon emissions from thousands of buildings. The Hill reports the measures will require the largest residential and commercial buildings to reduce emissions 40% 40% by 2040 and 80% by 2050.
Four states, Hawaii, California, New Mexico, and Washington, have passed laws committing to 100% clean energy. Colorado has a bill pending to do the same.
Recent opinion polls show that a shift in people's attitudes may be driving these changes. Compared with a decade ago, more Americans today say that protecting the environment and dealing with global warming should be the top priorities for the president and Congress.
The Pew Research Center says that about 56% of Americans prioritize environmental protection. However, climate change was still ranked behind many other issues, including health care and the economy.
A majority of Americans say that they have seen at least some effect of climate change where they live, such as the increasing frequency of severe storms, droughts, floods, and wildfires.
There are wide political divides over the effects of climate policy, with Democrats much more likely than Republicans to see the benefits. However, the Pew Center reports that 60% of millennial Republicans agree that climate change is already having some effect, and nearly half of them believe the government isn't doing enough to ameliorate the damages.
A new device can create electricity from snow.
Snowflakes have electrons that are positively charged, and in theory, when they come in contact with a material that's negatively charged, they can generate electricity. But what type of material would make this happen?
After much testing, researchers at UCLA found that silicone did the trick. They developed a nanogenerator that looks like a piece of cellophane with a small electrode coming out of it.
The scientists say that the device has many potential uses, such as being integrated into solar panels to be able to produce electricity even when they're covered by snow. And because it requires no batteries, they can also act as a weather station, reporting about how much snow is falling and wind speed.
The device could also be used by athletes wanting to track their performance. It can fit on the sole of a boot and send signals about speed and position. Starting in January, the world's entire shipping industry will be emitting less carbon dioxide in a transition that the Wall Street Journal is calling the biggest change in ship propulsion since the maritime industry moved from coal to heavy oil more than 100 years ago.
Ships are responsible for about 2.5% of all greenhouse gas emissions, including sulfur dioxide, a pollutant that can cause disease and environmental problems.
The International Maritime Organization has set new limits on the amount of sulfur dioxide that each ship can release, either by using low sulfur fuels or scrubbers to remove the contaminants.
Hakai Magazine reports that in its first 5 years, limiting the amount of sulfur will avoid hundreds of thousands of premature deaths worldwide. It will reduce asthma, strokes, heart disease, and lung cancer, and cut down on acid rain that harms forests, crops, and aquatic life. And finally, April 21st is UN World Creativity and Innovation Day, which calls for using design, the arts, and media to develop solutions toward a sustainable future.
To mark the day, the UN highlighted ideas, some of which focus on water and the environment. One of them was the Flip Floppy, a boat made from plastics collected in the ocean and named for the 30,000 recycled flip-flops used in its rainbow-colored hull.
Starting in January, the Flip Floppy sailed from Kenya to Tanzania, stopping in ports to promote a plastic revolution by raising awareness of the dangers of single-use plastics.
The UN also acknowledged innovation in fashion because of its impact on the environment. Research has shown that plastic not only gets into the ocean from discarded bags and bottles, but also from some of our clothes, which when washed, release microfibers into the water. Because many of these particles are too small to be filtered out by treatment facilities, they end up in waterways and eventually the ocean.
In honor of Earth Day, Ralph Lauren has announced its Earth Polo, making their iconic shirt entirely from recycled plastic bottles. It's also dyed in an innovative process that uses no water, and each shirt itself is recyclable.
The bottom line, the marketplace will be a big driver of change as consumers demand a sustainable future.
This Week in Water is sponsored by the American Water Works Association. Explore new trends in technology at ACE 19, June 9th through 12th in Denver. Learn more at awwaace.org.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.